We continue the Shiur Gemara. Yesterday we performed a test, the Shiur in Ashkenaz. It was a very successful test, so good that it doesn't even call for an encore. So today we revert back to Sephardic. The difference is all the same anyhow. The Gemara speaks about Shmuel, who was one of the two chief rabbis of Bavel. In fact, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that when we mention the word Rabotenu Shebabavel, top rabbis of Bavel, refers to Rav and Shmuel. Shmuel is famous because he was a baki, an expert in astronomy, in the calendar. He knew the secrets of the solar system, the lunar cycle, and in general, he was very wise and clever. One of his famous statements was, "I know the geography of heaven, the streets of heaven, as clearly as I know the streets of my own city." In addition, Shmuel was known as one of the greatest doctors of all time, medical doctor. Now, this is an unusual statement, because we find in the Gemara mentioned many times that the Torah frowns upon doctor in medicine. Though the Torah itself says, "Verapo yirape," that permission was granted to doctors to attempt cures, this permission is granted. It's a permit. It's permitted for a person to visit a doctor too. But it is preferable in the eyes of Hashem. Atov be'enecha, what is good in the eyes of Hashem, is a person who does not rely upon doctors, but rather turns to Hashem for assistance and for medical cure. In praying to Hashem, Hashem can inject the necessary ingredients of medicine and cure into simple bread and water. Especially Rabbeinu Zal speaks at length against the medical profession and shows proof of how unreliable they are. Many cases where he himself attested to the fact that he had seen debates among different medical teams where one team would claim that the cure for a certain type of disease was only that which was extremely warm. Hot, heat would cure it. And cold could prove fatal. A different team of doctors maintained the exact opposite. They said that cold is the cure and heat is fatal, which means that one of these two doctors was a killer. One of these two teams' theories. Same in many other instances. Therefore, the result is, why turn to doctors when there is a questionable benefit that can be derived from them, when we have an alternative that is positive? We know that Hashem is the doctor. Hashem is the one that can effect cures in a positive manner. And that is why the true path that a Jew should take is to, since we are not that great tzaddikim, and we can sit back at home if a person is very ill, dangerously ill, and say, "Well, let Hashem take care of it." At least we do go to doctors. Keep in mind the fact that the cure, the final cure, comes from Hashem. A doctor is only an agent and a messenger. And if a person is cured, he owes his thanks to Hashem and not to the doctor. Now, in the case of Shmuel, he was blessed with the knowledge, exact knowledge, of whichever types of herbs were necessary for certain medicines, because he took his knowledge from the Torah. Yemidah says that Shmuel was the doctor for Rebbe. Rebbe Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Yehuda Nasi. We discussed him in the recent past at great length about the different types of sicknesses that he suffered during his lifetime, the many years of Yisurim he accepted upon himself, especially teeth, sickness in the teeth. But he also had an eye disease that was extremely painful. And Shmuel offered to cure this eye disease. He said to Rebbe, Rebbe was Shmuel's Rebbe. He said, allow me to place some medicine into the eye, beneath the eyelid. The Rebbe said, that's impossible. I cannot tolerate any weight whatsoever on the eye itself. I could never take that medicine, no matter how light it is. Shmuel said, in that case, I have a salve that I can put on top of the eyelid, and it won't touch the eye itself at all. Again, Rebbe said, it's impossible, because even the weight on the eyelid, too, is unbearable. So no matter what benefit I can get from this, I could not bear the pain of the weight on the eyelid. Shmuel in his wisdom, knowledge of medicine, said, I can prepare a compound, a medicine, that I can place in a tube and place this underneath your pillow, the back of your head. The medicine is so powerful that it will penetrate through, go through the back of your head, and reach to the eyes themselves. They'll stop there, and they will cure the eyes. This he did, and Rebbe's eyes were cured. Rebbe was very much impressed by this. And, of course, he was very appreciative. So he tried very hard to repay Shmuel. Shmuel being the chief rabbi of Bavel, but there is no such thing as no real smicha in Bavel, no ordination, no degree of rabbi. The true degree of rabbi, the true smicha, can be received only in Eretz Yisrael. So Rebbe said, he decided, I can repay Shmuel by giving him smicha. He tried to find a moment, an opportune moment, to give him smicha. No matter how hard he tried, he could not find that moment. Always, they could not get together for that moment to have the smicha given. One time, Shmuel said to Rebbe, don't try, because there's a reason why it just doesn't come about. It is so destined from heaven that I will not receive smicha from you. I found a sefer written by Adam Harishon, by Adam himself. In this sefer, it tells about future generations. The sefer says that Shmuel, that means himself, Shmuel shall be called Chacham. It means a Talmid Chacham, a very learned rabbi, but he will never be called Rabbi. He'll never get the degree of smicha. In addition, Adam Harishon wrote that Rebbe's cure will come through Shmuel. Now this is very interesting, because we do not find reference made to this book of Adam Harishon elsewhere. But it's interesting to note that Adam Harishon did write a sefer in which he spoke about the future generations. The Gemara says that Hashem showed Adam Harishon all the future generations and all the leaders of those generations, but we don't find reference to the fact that he wrote a sefer on it. Here we see Befeirush. Actually, he did write a sefer, and in such minute detail, even speaking about a small instance about the cure of Rebbe's eyes. Gemara says that the Gemara itself is divided into two parts, Mishnah, which was composed by the Tanaim, that's the first rabbis of the Gemara, and the Gemara composed by the Amoraim. The last of the Tanaim was the one who compiled the six parts of the Mishnah. The last two rabbis of the Tanaim were Rebbe and Rabbi Natan. They were the end of the Mishnah, and they set up the Mishnayot. The last two rabbis of the Gemara were Rav Ashi and Ravina. They are the ones who set up the order of the Gemarot. They took all the discussions of the rabbis and the Amoraim at that time. They arranged it in order each one according to the Mishnah that it discussed. And that's how today we have the Shas that we speak about. This Shas was compiled by these two last two rabbis, Rav Ashi and Rav Ida. And that's why Tosafot says that whenever we see in the Gemara a word, someone says, I ask or I answer without a name, this means naturally Rav Ashi and Rav Ida. Rav Ashi is the last one to speak on his own in the Gemara. Otherwise, he quoted the name of the person who made the statement. However, we must stress again and again that the basic root, the foundation of the emunah of a Jew is that every word in the Torah, both the written Torah and the oral Torah, which is the Mishnah Gemara, was given by Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu at Mount Sinai. So that all the words in the Gemara, though we quote a certain rabbi who makes a statement, though we quote two rabbis who conflict, who argue and debate, still, those statements, both of them, are actual statements by Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu at Mount Sinai. To go back still further, let's not say that that's when the Torah was first revealed. The fact is that the Avot, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the Gemara says, obeyed all the laws of the Chachamim, of the Gemara, which means that they too knew Gemara. The Gemara says that Avraham Avinu had Shas. In fact, he had more Shas than we have. We have 60 Gemarot. We have limited amounts. The Gemara Avodah Zarah, for example, which we have today, is a small Gemara comparatively. Avraham Avinu had that Gemara, and it had 400 chapters in it. But they go still further back. Adam Harishon, first person created, learned all of Shas, learned all of Kabbalah. In fact, he taught the Sefarim to the angels in heaven. So the Torah is not new. The Torah is older than the world itself. But the entire Torah was composed by Hashem, as the Gemara says, written by Hashem 2,000 years before creation. But the Yesod Emunah is that Torah is min Hashemayim. The Gemara says that any Jew who disputes this fact, who says that even one single detail in the Gemara is composed by man, no matter which man it is, even Moshe Rabbeinu, that person can have no part in Olam Haba. Because one who does not have this basic faith does not deserve to ever go to Gan Eden. That's why this is so beneficial effect, because whenever we make a statement from the Gemara, we know that statement is 100% positive and true. Since the author of that statement is Hashem, and naturally Hashem is emet, the words are the truth. If ever a person is in doubt about any fact whatsoever, or any discussion among lahavdil philosophers or scientists, and we find a statement in the Torah to contradict them, we know that those scientists are speaking falsely against the truth, which is the word of Hashem. So in the knowledge of truth, no one can surpass one who has knowledge of Torah. The Gemara says that Rabbi Bar Nachmeni, who was also one of the great rabbis of the Gemara, he lived shortly after Shmuel. His death was caused because of the fear of the Romans. The Romans persecuted the Jews, and because of this harassment of the Romans, this shortened his life. Elida says, he tells the details of this story. One time, the enemies of the Jews reported to the king that there's one Jew, one person among the Jews, who causes a loss of taxes to the Roman king. 12,000 Jews avoid paying taxes twice a year, once in the summer and once in the winter, meaning once before Pesach and once before Sukkot. Those are the two main times when the Jews got together to listen to a lecture of the laws of the holidays. When the Rabbi ben Achmini gave these lectures, and most of the Jews, learned ones, got together to listen to these lectures, they assembled in his yeshiva, and there were a total of 12,000 Jews who assembled there. And that was a time when the king sent out his tax collectors, who could not find these people at home, and therefore they lost the taxes. So they reported to the king that there's this one person responsible, that the Rebbe was responsible for the loss of these taxes, therefore he should be arrested. The king sent a messenger, military aide, to arrest Rebbe. He tried to find him, and he couldn't because Rebbe had heard about this, and he fled. He left his city, went to a different city, and this military man picked up the trail and followed. And so he went from city to city, just escaping by a hairbreadth, till one day he came to the city of Pulpitisa. There, this messenger, the king, happened to come to the same inn where Rebbe was staying. At this inn, of course, there's a restaurant there. This messenger ordered food, and they placed in front of him a plate with 2 cups of wine. And as soon as he drank the 2 cups, they removed the tray. Now, the Gemara says that zugot, in those days, today possibly, not as much as then, those days the shedim, the evil spirits, were particular about a person drinking zugot, that means couples, 2 cups of wine and no more, because the shedim have power over the zugot, couples. Any person who drinks 2 cups of wine becomes susceptible to the pali shedim who do harm to him. So as soon as this person drank 2 cups of wine, they removed the tray, which means he wasn't going to drink any more. He was suddenly stricken very seriously, very serious illness. And the people in the inn were very frightened because they knew he was an important messenger of the king. They came to a Rebbe who was hiding there. They asked him, "What should we do?" But Rebbe said, "It's obvious that this was caused by drinking zugot. Bring to him a tray with 1 cup of wine. Let him drink the cup, remove the tray. He'll be cured, because this will remove the zugot." They did this. The man was cured. And he said, "I know that the person I am seeking is here. He must be around because I can feel that this took a lot of knowledge in curing me so suddenly. Only Rebbe would have that knowledge." So he made a fast search in the inn, and he caught Rebbe. And he said to him, "You have saved my life. So therefore, I'm willing to give my life for you. I'm going to go back, tell the king that I couldn't find you. Now, if he sentenced me to death, then I will not talk. I won't tell him about you, and I'll die. But if he sentences me to torture, that I cannot take. I'll have to tell him where you are. Meanwhile, I must lock you up and be sure that you don't escape." He locked him up, tightly sealed him in a room, and he left. Rebbe was fearful, and he prayed very hard, and the wall crashed in. He was able to walk out of that room. There he fled further. He came to a swamp, and he sat down on a tree stump, very dejected. But despite his being rejected, he began to study Torah as diligently as ever before. He was in the middle of studying Torah. Meanwhile, coincidentally, something took place at that very moment in heaven. Yehuda says that in heaven there are yeshivot, just like there are on earth. There are yeshivot conducted by angels, the study of Torah. There is a yeshiva conducted by Moshe Rabbeinu, one conducted by Mashiach till the time that he comes to earth, and others conducted by the great rabbis of the past. There is also the Masifta Dedekiah, a high yeshiva, where there are lessons and discussions in Torah between Kaviyachol Hashem and the leading angels. At that moment, there was a discussion in heaven about a certain Hebrew law. The law states that a person who has leprosy is considered tameh. He is impure, and he must be excommunicated, be kept away from other Jews. Now, what constitutes leprosy? Yehuda tells about four different types of diseases. Leprosy is a skin disease. Four different types of the skin disease. All of them are cases where the skin turns white. Instead of the flesh color, turns to a whiteness. The worst type is the disease called Bahedet, where the skin turns as white as snow. There are 4 degrees of whiteness. The whiter the leprosy, the more severe it is. There is one that is like lamb's wool, the whiteness of lamb's wool. There is one that is like the white of an egg. There is one that is white as plaster. And the whitest, strongest, is white as snow, which is the sharpest whiteness that exists. If a person finds that on his arm, for example, there is this rash, a white rash, this behemoth, he is not yet tameh. The Kohen is supposed to lock him up for a week and then to see if there are white hairs grow in the middle of this rash, then he is tameh. But the rash comes first. The behemoth comes first. And then white hairs are formed, grow in it, he is 100% tameh. But if the person had white hairs there first, and then the rash grew around it, he is not tameh, he is 100% tahor, pure. So we know then that if the behemoth precedes the white hair, tameh. If the white hair precedes the behemoth, he is tahor. Now the Gemara says in heaven, in the yeshiva in heaven, there arose a discussion about the question, what if a person has this rash and 2 white hairs in it, and there is a safek, a doubt, which one came first? Did the hairs come first that he is pure, or did the behemoth come first that he is tameh? This was a discussion in heaven at that very moment. There was a debate in heaven, and there were 2 sides to this debate. Hashem said, the law in that case is that the person is tahor, he is pure. And all the angels in heaven, the entire yeshiva, argue this point. They maintain that the person is tameh, impure. This did not constitute disrespect to Hashem, chas v'shalom. The same token, if you have a class, a rabbi teaching students, no matter how much inferior they might be in knowledge, they have a right to express their opinion and to argue the point. This does not mean disrespect. A good student is one who asks questions. He wants to understand. And it's up to the rabbi to explain, to clarify. At times, the Gemara says that a student can enlighten the rabbi with his questions. In the case here, there was a simple discussion, a debate on this point. The Torah is open to debate. And in this debate, strangely was between Hashem and the angels. Hashem said the law is, in case of safek, doubt, he is pure, tahor. The angels said he is tameh. Now, in heaven, the question arose, how will we prove who's right? And they said, what's the question of proving who's right? Is there any question of doubt there who's right? The answer is that the Torah was no longer the power influence of heaven. Hashem had granted the Torah to be sent down to earth in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and from that time on, all laws, rabbinic laws, were to be decided by the rabbis only. As, for example, the Gemara states very clearly that to decide, to determine something as important as a holiday, for example, fasting on Yom Kippur, depends upon the Sanhedrin, the rabbis on earth. Rosh Hashanah, 10 days before, when is Rosh Hashanah? The Gemara says that in heaven, the angels ask Hashem. On Rosh Hashanah, you sit on the throne of judgment. Now, when it comes close to Rosh Hashanah, they ask Hashem, when are you going to sit on this throne of judgment? And Hashem says, don't ask me. We must wait until the rabbis decide whether the new moon has appeared legally or not. It's their decision. If they say the new moon has appeared, then that's Rosh Chodesh, the first day of the month, which is Rosh Hashanah. So we see that in heaven, they too wait for the decision of the rabbis on earth. Here too, the question arose, who will prove who's right? We cannot decide it in heaven because the privilege of deciding, determining a law was given to the rabbis on earth. Who is authorized to answer this question? And they said there is one rabbi on earth who is an extreme expert in the laws of leprosy. And that is Rabbi Bar Nachmani. We must summon him to the heavenly yeshiva and let him decide. Summon him means he has to pass away. So they sent the angel of death down to bring Rabbi Bar Nachmani. The angel came before him to draw his soul from him, and the angel of death was powerless, because as long as Rabbi Bar Nachmani studied Torah, as long as he kept saying words of Torah, he was completely immune to the angel of death, the same as the story of King David. So the angel of death waited till he saw he could wait no longer, so he made a sound that resembled the sound of soldiers in the nearby bushes. Rabbi Nachmani heard that, and he said, I'm tired of fleeing these Romans. I'm willing to depart for this world. I can't take this harassment anymore. At that moment, the angel of death took his soul. In that second, just before his soul departed, the question was placed before him, and he said, his answer was, Tahor, Tahor. Twice he said, pure, pure. The law in this case, if there's a doubt, it is pure. Meaning that he coincided with the statement of Hashem. A voice came from heaven and said, Ashrecha, Rabbi Bar Nachmani. Fortunate and blessed are you, Rabbi Bar Nachmani, that you are pure, and your soul left you with the word Tahor, because you have also agreed to the words parallel that of Hashem himself. Immediately afterwards, a note fell from heaven that reached the rabbis on earth. The note said, Rabbi Nachmani has been invited to the yeshiva of heaven, which means he has left the earth. His soul has left the earth, and it means that the people on earth are now held responsible for his burial with honors, honors due to a great tzaddik. The Gemara says that Abaye and all the rabbis, Abaye was his closest student. In fact, Abaye was adopted by Rabbi Bar Nachmani. He went out with all the rabbis to seek where Rabbi's body was, and they couldn't find it. They went to the swamp, and they saw a group of birds, an entire flock of birds, just hovering, stationary in the air, forming a shadow. And they said, this must be the place where his body is, and forming a shadow over it that shouldn't be hurt by the sun. They came, they found his body. They delivered the proper hesped, the eulogies. He was buried with honor. They declared 3 days and three nights of mourning. In the 3 days and three nights, again a note fell from heaven and said, anyone who stops mourning now shall be in cheder, a heavenly curse upon that person. So they prolonged the period of mourning to 7 days. The third note fell from heaven and said, you may now go to your homes in peace. The day of Rabbi Nachmani's passing, there was a businessman riding on a camel, and suddenly a storm came up, a powerful wind that lifted him off the ground with the camel from one side of the river across to the other side, threw him upon the other side. He was shocked. This was an unusual type of storm, and he asked what happened. They told him Rabbi Ben Nachmani had passed away. So he turned his face up to heaven and he said, Hashem, the whole world is yours. Everything belongs to you. Rabbi Ben Nachmani also belongs to you. He was very loyal to you, very devoted, and you show a devotion to him too. Why should that cause you to destroy your world? If this storm keeps up, the world will be destroyed. But these words of prayer, the storm subsided. I return for a moment to this point. We happen to have discussed this very recently, but it pays to speak about this once more for the sake of the record, let's say. Question is, we have a debate in heaven between Hashem and the angels in heaven. Fine. As we said, it is proper that even lower type, a lower mentality, one of a lower level can discuss something with one who is much higher if that one possesses modesty, humbleness. And of course, the Torah says that Hashem displays the greatest degree of humbleness more than any person existing. It was from Hashem that Moshe Rabbeinu learned his degree of modesty. However, we cannot deny that the word of Hashem is emet, truth, always, and that Hashem's wisdom is infinite, and that the Torah itself is the word of Hashem. So if there is a debate between Hashem and the angels, we could understand that a little. We could grasp that. Question is, though, what was the result of that debate? In a debate, one is always proven right, the second to the contrary. In the case of this debate, they said, let us find proof as to who is right. They called upon Rabbi Nachmani to decide this point, and he said Tahor very nicely, coinciding with the decision of Hashem. However, it does not end there, because if we want to decide a law, we turn to the code of Hebrew law, which is the Shulchan Aruch, written by the Rishonim, one of which is the Rambam. The Rambam states, the case of Baheret in Se'el Avan, case of the leprosy with white hair, where there is a doubt as to which one came first, the exact question that was discussed in heaven, Rambam says the final word, the final law is that that person is tameh, impure. That's the way the law remains today. That's the paradox. How is it possible that the law should be the opposite of what Hashem said? Enough that there was a debate about it, but that it should turn out that the others cut a hole or right. Hashem's decision Tahor is not the final one. The decision of Shulchan Aruch is against Hashem. How can that be possible? The answer is that Hashem teaches us a lesson, as we see in other cases too. Even it says when Hashem said, let us na'aseh Adam, let us create man. Or the time of the generation who built the tower of Babel, Hashem said, let us go down and let us confuse their languages. They could not converse with each other. The Gemara says, let us go down, let us create. Hashem Echad, Hashem is one. Hashem needs no permission or no counsel of anyone. The answer the Gemara says is, Hashem simply displays his modesty and humbleness by speaking to the heavenly court, saying to them, even a king should always resort to advice, discussion with his council of ministers. So in modesty, Hashem says, let us decide this point together. Let us carry out the following instructions or whatever decision is correct. Now, this is one case of the modesty of Hashem. Second case is where Hashem says a law is stated and I will accept a decision that is contrary to mine. Why? Because I have a very important lesson to impart to all future generations, to future great rabbis who might be misled into thinking that they are infallible, they are perfect. So here Hashem said, law is, I say Tahor, and the final law is Tameh, which means, I, Hashem says, have been defeated. I've lost out. I've been defeated. But the important lesson is, Hashem says, that when I am defeated, I am really the winner. When I win, I am the loser. For example, to defeat means to overpower, to conquer. When the generation of the flood were evil, the world was corrupt, Hashem showed his great powers, the Gemura. He came down and destroyed the world. Hashem said, I won, right? But I lost. I had a whole world created. I lost an entire world. I was left with just a handful of people. All of my creation went down the drain. All human beings, all animals, all birds were wiped out. Would you consider this really winning or victory? I lost out. But there's another case, Hashem says, where I lost the battle. When the Jews, when the people in the desert built the golden calf, a major crime was committed. And I said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm going to wipe out the entire nation. I have decided, this is my decision, that I wipe out every one of the Jews to the last person, just leave you alone. This is my decision. Moshe Rabbeinu argued against Hashem's decision. He prayed, he pleaded, he insisted, and he threatened. And finally, he won. He won over in having Hashem say, I consent, I agree to forgive the Jews for this sin. Salachti kedvarecha, I have forgiven as you say, not as I said. So Hashem says, there I lost, right? But I did not lose because I gained the whole nation. In losing this battle with Moshe Rabbeinu, I gained an entire nation. So this loss was really a victory. And here too Hashem says, in this case I show, I illustrate a case in point where it seems that the other side has won this argument. Hashem says to all future rabbis, if you ever get into a debate, then you find that you're in the same position as I was, when you state a law and you lose, know that you have really won. If you win, then you have not really won. Let's take a case, an example. A rabbi discusses a point where his knowledge seems to be supreme. He argues a certain law with his disciples or his colleagues. He insists on his being right, and after a long deliberation, he finds they discover that he was right. What is the result? He is just as right now as he was before. He remains with the same contention, the same idea, and the same knowledge that he had previously. There was nothing actually won as far as he's concerned. But should the rabbi lose this argument, should he be proven wrong, he has lost, but actually he has gained. Because now in losing, he has gained information which he did not have before. He now knows more than he had known previously. So the loss then, in truth, is a gain. This is what the lesson that Hashem imparts here. Why the Rambam says that the law remains not like Hashem, not because, as for Shalom, Hashem didn't have the right answer. Hashem said this to teach this all-important lesson to the future, a lesson of modesty, a lesson in humbleness, a lesson in the true word, the true meaning of the word victory. And that's why the Yemeneh says, too, when we say in Tehillim, Lamnatzeach, Mizmor LeDavid, Lamnatzeach. What does that mean? The Yemeneh says, sing a praise to Hashem. Menatzeach means to one who defeats Hashem. If ever you defeat a person, the Yemeneh says, the person you defeated is sad. In the case of Hashem, when you defeat Kaviyachol, you defeat Hashem, he is happy. Defeat means that you are guilty of sin. You pray very deeply, hitbodedut. You pour out your heart to Hashem, and you overcome. Defeat means you change the decision in heaven. No longer is there a punishment about to be meted out to you. Because you have won out a pardon, so you have Kaviyachol defeated Hashem, Hashem is very happy about that. This is the true power of tefillah. And that's, too, is the greatness of Hashem, where this defeat is really victory. Victory for both sides, because you have won a pardon. Hashem has won that which he wants. He wants an Asher to return to him and to become pure. Even it says that Shimon ben Chalafta was one of the great rabbis of the Gemara, but he was one of the very heavy ones, great deal of weight. There were a number of rabbis who were extremely heavy in weight. We discussed a few of them before. He too was very heavy. We will not use the word overweight, Chas v'Shalom, because these were so pure and holy. The Torah says that their body was as pure as their neshama. They had purified themselves so. But he was an extreme heavyweight. One day, it was very hot. The sun was baking. And he sat on top of a hill, sort of a small mountain. And as he rested there, he said to his daughter, "Please take a fan and fan me so I can get some fresh, cool air. The sun is so merciless. If you do that for me, I'll reward you with a bushel of spices." She was about to do it. Suddenly, a fresh wind came up that spelled all the hot air, and of course was much more powerful and much more effective than a simple fan. Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta said, "I promised my daughter a bushel of spices for just fanning me alone. How many," he said to this wind that came up, "how many bushels of spices do I owe your master for fanning me with this wind?" The greatness of Hashem, who could remove the heat far better, more powerfully than the best air conditioning available. This is the power of Hashem, who is Mishane Itim, Machlif Et Hazmanim, the master of weather, the master of the elements, the power over what scientists call nature. There is no such thing as nature, natural elements. everything is directed by Hashem himself. And that's why the Torah says very often that the Hebrew word for nature is hateva, the nature. The word hateva is begimetria elokim. Hashem himself rules the nature. There is no such thing as nature of its own. In fact, Baal Shem Tov says that every movement of what's so-called nature, the slightest wind or the slightest rays of sun or anything, is because Hashem wills it at that time. This too is the basis of Emunah, and it is only through this Emunah that a Jew remains pure.